Welcome to the podcast version of Police Science Doctor, the online resource bridging the gap between research and investigative practice, for police personnel who go the extra mile, for academics who want to connect better with investigative practitioners, on YouTube and on policesciencedoctor.com. Right, okay, so the next talk we have is Professor Jason Roach. Jason is professor at the Department of Behavioral and Social Sciences at the University of Huddersfield and director of the Applied Criminology and Policing Center. He is also the editor of the Police Journal. Jason has coined the term self-selection policing and works a lot with the psychology of influence or nudge psychology to prevent crime. And this is what he's talking about today. I'm going to play you Jason's talk now.
My name is Jason Roach and I'm a Professor of Psychology and Policing at the University of Huddersfield. I'm going to use this very short presentation just to try and introduce the idea of using psychology of influence in order to reduce crime and prevent crime. Preventing crime makes you think of locks, etc. straight away, doesn't it? But there's got to be more to it than that, and there is more to it than that. It's about influence. It's about influencing people's thinking and consequently, hopefully, their behaviour. Now, there are lots of influences out there that we're influenced by, the main one being, like my little fish there, probably peer pressure. Okay, anyone that's got any children out there will know that if you want your child to do what you wanted to do, get another child to tell it, particularly that's with teenagers. They listen to each other. Peer pressure is probably the best psychology of influence example that I can give you. But there are others. But when we're talking about preventing crime, who are we actually trying to influence? Straight persuade. Well, there's of course those who committed or are thinking about committing it and trying to dissuade them, trying to put them off to doing it. But there's also those who might become victims, i.e. most of us, of crime, particularly if you live in a high risk burglary area, for example. You need to be more heightened kind of response to what you can do in order to reduce that risk of you being a victim of burglary. So there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done around the potential victims and influencing their decision making and consequently hopefully their behaviour. And then there's the third group of people who may or may not consciously or unconsciously influence kind of crime prevention, and that's called police, who are very consciously do that in their patrols, putting people off committing crime, etc. But also unconsciously, so people that are just kind of walking past a moment when somebody is thinking of committing a crime that may put them off. We need to think about how we can also influence these people. For crime to occur, you need opportunity. In order to reduce crime and to reduce the opportunities, then we need to do things about the environment in which they occur and the situations. For example, increasing the effort, making it more difficult for someone who's thinking about committing a crime to actually think, well, is it worth it? So is it worth trying to cut open that great big chain, for example, on that ATM? Might not get much out of it. What's the point? Might walk away. Increase the risks, of course. Well, if I think I'm going to get caught, or these risks are heightened, then you know, the CCTV about something, then I'm probably going to be deterred, at least if I'm thinking rationally. Reducing the reward. So if I do manage to get inside that ATM there and I get the cash out, but there is a mechanism by which if you do try to force an entry into an ATM, indelible ink is squirted all over the money, making it worthless. What's the point? Reduce provocations as well, so that I'm provoked into committing a crime. And then removing the excuses as well, so make it difficult for me to neutralise my actions and my thinking, so I may rationalise or neutralise, in fact, any guilt I might have for committing a burglary by saying that the people that live there, they're insured anyway and they'll get their stuff back. Not just a little bit more subtle. Anyone recently been in a shop where they've gone to pay and the person behind the tiller said that will just be £1.50, that will just be $1.23. The insertion of that word just, the idea is the nudge. It makes you feel like you've got a good deal. Nudge originated from Sullivan Sunstein's work, a behavioural economist, about what it is that we need to do or how we can influence people's decision making by just rearranging the architecture of mind, if you like, or the way that they make decisions. And that is not to take people's choices away, just to accentuate, almost analogous to putting something in bold in a list, so that they identify with it and that they kind of more likely to choose that, the more pro-social option, we're told. So what's the difference between the sort of situation of crime prevention measures and trying to reduce the opportunities for crime and the more subtle nudge? I mean, they're related to, definitely. So what's the difference? Well, keep off the grass is very much a situational crime prevention sign. Keep off, you know, don't go on it. That's it. The rules are there. Don't break them. This one, I think, is more of a nudge. Do not disturb. Tiny grass is dreaming. So the thing with nudges is nudges are specifically that used to influence certain groups of people. In this case, people who actually care about grass and lawns, reminding them not to walk on it. You know, it's not going to keep your hardened grass walker offender off of it, but it will keep most people who've got a bit of a conscience off. Plus, it's nice. So nudging, how do you do it? What are they? Well, nudges need to be nuanced. There needs to be differences between them, and they need to be targeted at specific demographic groups, particularly groups of people. They need to speak to them, and you need to understand how they make decisions in order to be able to speak more to them. Usually, appealing to people's pro-social side, the right thing, if you like. Often they're unconscious. They tap into, as I said before, existing bias and default decision-making. People, like my little fish, is going against the grain. People tend to go with the grain. So they will unconsciously follow other people. Discerning. Nudges, you should target those on the cusp of choosing the pro-social option. It's just those that are about to choose the pro-social thing, you know, to not walk on the grass, for example. They're thinking about it. You make them think about it, they decide not to do it. Not those who really have a disdain for the law and any rules. They'll just walk on the grass anyway. Give people a choice. So don't take the choice away. It's not binary. Do it or don't do it. There are other choices, yeah? And you just accentuate using a nudge the choice. Going back to the shop scenario, that'll just be £1.50. Doesn't take my choice away from going to any other shops. It's not saying you have to come in this shop, but it's just nudging me into thinking that this shop is value for money and that I'll come again. They have to be easy. They have to be easy to explain and implement nudges. Otherwise, if they get too complex, then it doesn't have an effect on people because they don't get it, they don't grasp it, yeah, particularly at an unconscious level. They have to be inexpensive, which is why police are increasingly liking the kind of the nudge approach to trying to reduce crime, because it's got to be cheap. So it might be a leaflet, yeah, a very well designed leaflet, but it might be a leaflet. It's not hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of CCTV, for example. And they have to be testable. So you have to know whether they actually work or it has had an influence on people's decision making. If it doesn't, then, modify the nudges or move on, come up with some others. We did a quick study of burglary, student victimisation and burglary in Durham, which is in the north of England. The police had information about kind of the, like, people that lived in these areas, these high risk areas, but I wanted a bit more information about them if we're going to nudge them into being more security conscious, because a lot of the burglaries that were happening were insecure. People were leaving windows and doors open in multi-occupancy dwellings as well. So I designed a questionnaire where the police survey, where the police would knock on the doors, or police cadets would knock on the doors and ask questions, this survey to the people that lived there, so that we got more information on who lived there and possibly nudged them. And within that, within the questions were things like, do you know that you will be deemed negligent if you leave the doors open and your insurance company won't pay out? Do you know that you live in a high burglary area, etc.? So there were certain nudges in there as well. And by just doing the survey, you know, we wanted the data in order to then come up with some other interventions in which to kind of, you know, try to nudge the thinking around the crime prevention and burglary reduction. But the actual conducting of the survey itself had an effect. In fact, when we've compared to the same periods, so the survey, for example, when it ran for the 6 months that it was administered, we compare the same months for the previous 3 years, and it went down considerably. And that was just because people were being primed. And they were kind of being nudged into thinking, hang on, I live in a... And they began to, obviously, I think, start to started to take more precautions in terms of locking their doors before they went out, etc. It also probably had an effect on a lot of the local burglars, if you like, because they knew that this was going on, and they probably laid low for a little and didn't commit as many burglaries. Either way, or both, burglary went down just because of the survey and the administration of the survey. And it led to a couple of informed, student-focused leaflets around don't be the one to make it easy for them, flex it before you exit. I wish I'd come up with flex it before you Brexit. It might have solved a few problems over here in the UK. And make sure that all the windows are locked. It's very much a student-focused nudge that for a leaflet at the front door, inside of the front door, before they go out, just to make sure that you know, they've locked all the doors and windows. Leave you with the locus of control, which is about all of us, really. Yeah, it's a personality thing. If you feel that you have a strong internal locus of control, then that means that you have constructed control over your destiny, so that you can reduce your chances, for example, of becoming a victim of crime. It's within your hands. You can minimize, you can't eradicate them, but you can minimize the chances of you, risks of you becoming a victim of crime. Whereas if it's external, okay, you've got an external, a strong external locus of control, then you will think, well, it doesn't matter what I do. I live in a high crime area. I'm going to be likely to be a victim of crime. Whatever I do, it's not worth thinking about. So I think locus of control is important in understanding as well in how we might influence people in order to kind of become more security conscious and you know, ergo, to reduce their chance of becoming a victim and reduce, prevent crime. Thank you very much for your attention. I hope that's been useful. And please don't hesitate to contact me should you have any further questions. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jason, for that. So before I get to the summary, there's a comment I would like to respond to from Rudwan Benz. Due to manpower, the prevention of crime on a station level are neglected sometimes. This causes an increase in most burglaries and theft. I have noticed if I dedicate my efforts to prevention of crime via patrols, it decreases the element of having a complaint. Now, if you're talking about a complaint as in a call for service or a crime report, yes, you're absolutely right. So patrolling can be very effective if you're doing it in the right places. Random patrols are pretty useless, but if you go for the hotspots of crime, where the most crimes happen at the times they happen, or hotspots of harm. Harm and crime are sometimes completely different things. But if you go and patrol where the hotspots are, you can greatly reduce crime. And there's been a lot of research. It was one of the most established pieces of knowledge in evidence-based policing, that hotspots, targeted hotspots patrols are very, very effective at preventing crime. So my summary from Professor Jason Roach's talk here was nudge can impact all those in the middle, not hardened criminals or passive victims. So if we've got a spectrum here, here are the hardened criminals. They're going to do whatever they want, no matter what the law says. They're not going to be impacted by nudge. We've got passive victims here who just float through life and think that nothing is within their control. Things are just happening to them. You know, it's very, very miserable, really. If you can't take control of your life, you know, you're always going to be completely vulnerable to everybody else's choices because you never make your own. So these two extremes are not going to be influenced by nudge. Nudge really targets those people in the middle, those who are at the cusp of doing the right thing. So with the grass, for example, you know, I'm not a criminal, but I might walk over grass. But if there's a sign saying keep off the grass, and especially keep off the grass because the grass is sleeping, I would stay off. So it's about people who are at the cusp of doing the pro-social thing. And it's not prescriptive. It doesn't tell you what to do. It presents a list of options. You can walk on the grass, you can stay off the grass. But what it does, and Jason said that really well, it just highlights the option that that we would want you to take. So I probably already said everything now. Crime prevention, increase risk, reduce reward, reduce opportunity, increase effort. So that's normal traditional crime prevention stuff. Nudge is more subtle. It gives another option and highlights a preferred option on a list, accentuates the desirable pro-social choice. Need to understand the decision-making process of those to be nudged, and it needs to be cheap. So when he was talking about that Durham example with the students, first you need to research the students and do these surveys to find out how they make the decisions, and then you can try and influence that decision. And it targets those on the cusp of doing the pro-social thing, as we already said. Okay, at this point, I'd like to thank my second sponsor for this conference, and that's Cazenovia College. I'm going to read something out, and you can see the logo here. Cazenovia College, located in upstate New York, USA, offers a dual major in psychology and criminal justice and homeland security studies to motivated students looking for a competitive degree. Students of this dual program will learn about applied disciplines such as investigative psychology. Investigative psychology tends to be more actively engaged in supporting the various aspects of the investigative cycle and draws upon an inductive methodological approach to aid active investigations. An operational application of investigative psychology would be the development and utilization of a geographical profile, for example, to aid in the identification of where an unknown offender of an unsolved crime series is likely to be based. In short, this enhanced curriculum has been developed for students interested in learning about criminal behaviors, careers in law enforcement, as well as preparation for careers and or graduate studies in forensic or investigative psychology, forensic mental health counseling, or law school. So you've got the link to Cazenovia University, the college there, and that you'll major. Copy that onto your list of links for later and just have a look and check them out. And I'm very grateful for the sponsorship of this conference. We've got two more sessions to go. That doesn't mean that any less valuable than the others. I just have 9 sessions to take you through today. Thank you for listening. I hope you found this content useful. You can get access to each episode's transcript with key learning points, timestamps, and references if you get yourself onto my mailing list. Just go to the main website on policesciencedoctor.com, and on the bottom of each page you will find a sign-up form for notifications of new content. Just enter your first name, your preferred email address, and the type of organization you work for. You will not get any spam. This is just for me to let you know about new content and for you to get access to all the transcripts.